The good people at Ovid.TV proudly present the Linoleum Knife Cinema Podcast Variety Hour, starring Alonzo Duralde and Dave White. I'm your host, Dave White, also the announcer. You're Alonzo Duralde. Tell them what they've won, Alonzo.
You need some. We need to show you some more stop at deodorant spots from the 50s.
I'm as polished as I need to be right now.
disagree. So the wonderful folks at Ovid.TV, it is one of the best streaming services out there.
It's a wonderfully eclectic
and fascinating mix of international and independent documentary shorts, all kinds of cinema.
Stuff you can't find anywhere else.
Absolutely. So many streaming exclusives. This is where you go for the really cool, really deep cut cineast material. One of the films they are highlighting right now is Mahr Avi Samra's powerful documentary, A Made for Each. It's about the practice in Lebanon of bringing in domestic workers from Asia and Africa, only to then really exploit them and practically enslave them. By the way, the system is set up. It's generally, you know, not too far from just being trafficking that's going on. And this documentary takes a really scalding look at that. And it's part of a series of films available on Ovid right now about the life and work and, the justice for domestic workers around the world.
This is our last Ovid spot for a while, right?
For now. Until
they decide to do more with us.
Yeah.
Okay, so then, since we're not going to be doing another one in the immediate future, I want to tell you about a movie that is also dropping. They didn't ask us to do this, but I want to tell you about a movie that's dropping on Ovid like right now. It's called Flower in Otomi. It's about Denny Prieto Stock, who was a 19-year-old woman who was killed along with four of her comrades in the National Liberation Forces, which was a forerunner to the Zapatistas. This happened in the 1970s. And it is a documentary about a young woman who died for her beliefs. She died for her convictions, for the cause of liberation and justice in her country. And it's also a film about how women are often ignored when it comes to telling the historical moments of those struggles.
Interesting.
So it's, yes, that's on Ovid too right now. They're not even paying us extra for me to talk about
it. We're just telling you because it's
telling
so
you
awesome.
About it. Yeah.
So yeah, go to Ovid.TV and sign up. And while you're doing it, use the promo code cinema, because you're a Linoleum Knife listener, and that means that you're in the know. A cinema code gets you a free month of Ovid when you subscribe. So once again, Ovid.TV, promotion code cinema. Thank you.
Do you want some theme music now?
I think we should.
All right. Hang on. Here we go. Theme music.
It is a podcast of the cinema.
And I'm Dave, and he's Alonzo.
Yes.
We're film critics. He's the film reviews editor for The Wrap. I'm a freelance person who writes for The Wrap. And the
if you have not read Dave's review of the Jesus music of The Wrap, you totally should. And if you have not listened to our special Linoleum Knife episode, where we talk about the documentary The Jesus Music in depth with CCM chart topper Semler, aka
she is a chart
our good friend Grace Baldridge,
chart topper
Jackie Jorp Jomp. You should check that out after you listen to this episode, of course.
Somebody asked me why we separated out that film and Grace from the rest of the show, and I was like, honestly, because of Zoom.
Yeah.
Because it was a Zoom interview, and that always screws up with the sound quality. Everyone sounds kind of
tinny
and far away. And I just didn't, and further, you know, I just didn't want to have her sit through
discussions of all these other movies.
All the other movies. that, you know, had not been seen yet by Grace Semler Baldridge, CCM queer chart-topping artist.
That's right.
But we do talk entirely for about 50 minutes.
Yeah.
We go very deep on this subject because, obviously, Grace grew up in that world. So did I. Only we did so from different generational vantages.
Yes.
And so between the two of us, we are a complete protein.
You're the rice and beans.
We are a complete protein of being angry about this movie.
Well, and she's somebody who is, you know, this is a, she toils within the world that this documentary covers, you know.
Yeah.
So she offered a very valuable insider's perspective as well.
So, you know, if you miss me going in on the Christian narrative fictional films that I refused to do starting in 2016 after that man got elected by white evangelicals, you can hear us tear apart a documentary.
A faith-based documentary.
While agreeing on the true fact that...
Amy Grant is awesome.
Amy Grant is great. So... And I don't want anybody coming at me about that. I love her. I love Amy Grant so much. She's always been there for me.
Okay, Dave.
I'm here with you to discuss three other films today.
Not just three.
Oh, yeah. There's that fourth one that we watched. And I actually forgot about it until
I mentioned it
10 minutes ago when you mentioned it. You were like, oh, hey, are we going to do blah, blah? And I said, oh, that's right. We did watch that really boring movie. That's not good.
Do you want me to talk about The Guilty or do you want to catch up with that?
You said I didn't have to because you know me.
Yeah.
And you know what I don't have time in my life for.
Yeah.
I like the high and I like the low. The mushy middle is not my place to be. Not where I like to be.
I would say if you're going to devote your time to anything, watch the Danish original.
Yeah, I could catch up
on
to
Hulu,
that.
But you don't need to watch the American remake on Netflix.
Well, then, like, jump into... Talk about it for
sure.
Three,
that's
three
kind
minutes.
Of my capsule review right there.
Yeah.
This is a new American remake of the 2018 film of the same title. Antoine Fuqua directs this time. Nick Pizzolatto, who was one of the main architects of True Detective, wrote the screenplay, and Jake Gyllenhaal stars as a cop who, while awaiting a disciplinary hearing, is forced to work as a 911 operator. And over the course of one evening, gets involved with a potential kidnapping. And it's a situation that just gets tenser and tenser.
Is tenser and tenser how we would describe
more and more tense?
More and more tense. Right, the tension mounts.
The tension mounts.
Yeah.
However, it's all a bit overblown, and I'm sure it didn't help that I watched the Danish one first, because the Danish one, as you might imagine, is kind of spare and cool, and this one is very sweaty and shouty.
I'm sweaty and shouty enough in my own life.
Yeah, I don't need extra from the movies, thank you.
I aspire to, like, Denmark levels of...
of chill.
Of chillness.
Yeah, reserve.
Yeah.
But yeah, it you know, apparently this was a COVID production. There aren't a ton of other actors that are in the room with him at the call center.
Right.
There's a lot of famous people's voices that get used. You know, Riley Keogh and Peter Sarsgaard and Divine Joy Randolph. You know, and here's the thing: I would say even the 2018 The Guilty is not as good as Locke. Like for me, that is the thing to live up to. If you're trying to make a movie that's about somebody who's on the phone for the entire film, and it's all about the sort of mental picture we're creating in our heads based on the conversations that he's having and the way that we understand what the stakes are and what the tension is and where the suspense comes from and what we're learning about character and all that other stuff. Jake Gyllenhaal is fine. He's acting a lot in this. You know, it's the kind of thing where
that,
like,
doesn't fill me with confidence.
Yeah, I mean, it's not bad. It's not embarrassing. It's just like...
But when you say acting a lot, that feels like code word to me. Like, if you were saying that to me over breakfast, oh, he's acting a lot in this movie, I would say to you, okay, then I don't have to watch it.
I think he could take it down a peg. But, right. You know, it's you're not embarrassed for him, but it's just sort of like you're questioning Antoine Fuqua, I think, as far as like maybe you could have, you know.
Listen, I have questioned Antoine Fuqua more than
throughout
once.
His career. Yeah, I don't doubt it. Yeah, I just found this all to be pitched a little high, and I was not feeling it. But if you want to watch it, it's on Netflix. But if you want to watch the 2018 Danish film, it's on Hulu. And if you want to watch Locke, it's on Canopy.
Speaking of Locke,
yes,
we are not
reviewing
Venom this week.
Correct.
We are going to be waiting until it streams.
Yes.
Because we asked to be,
sent a link
for the for our ability to review it, not just here, but more importantly, we were on
KCRW.
We were on KCRW. We were on NPR on Friday talking about films. And they wouldn't send out a link, which is a new development in the past couple of months where some big studios, not all of them, some big studios are just refusing to do that anymore, even though that was a practice that worked well throughout 2020,
yes,
when no one was in movie theaters or very few people. Only the most foolhardy were in
movie
theaters.
Well, and most movie theaters were closed.
And most movie theaters were closed. And so the fact that even with the Delta variant sort of ripping through the country still, this decision on their part, I think, is callous.
Yeah, that's a good word.
In regard to critics who are older, who have underlying health conditions, who might be disabled in some way, and who really cannot risk being around other folks right now.
Yeah.
I mean, do you want me to read what I wrote to the publicity team?
I know.
I wrote an email to 7 people on the publicity team and got no response.
Dave wrote a very clear-cut response regarding their refusal to send links to people.
Listen, there was no fussing and no cussing.
No.
That was just me saying, here's what's going on.
Yeah.
And why aren't you all doing this? The pandemic is not over. Yeah. Why do you act like it is?
So, yeah. So, we're not reviewing Venom this week. We're not reviewing Bond next week. I've got November 12th circled on my calendar because that's when Shang-Chi finally shows up on Disney+, and
right,
I can see that one. So,
yeah,
where we are right now is pretty much if we can get a link, even if it's a theatrical film, we'll go ahead and talk about it. If we can get a link and it's a streaming title, of course, we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
But if it's a theatrical title and they're making us go into a theater somewhere to
see
it,
that is not happening right now.
We're not doing it.
Not
I'm sorry.
No. Younger film critics, people who are less vulnerable, are going to in-person press screenings.
Mm-hmm.
And I support what they're doing.
Sure.
They feel good about that. But there should be a choice.
Absolutely.
So you'll get some Venom when you get some Venom. How about that? And I already know what's going to happen.
What?
You're going to hate it. I'm going to love it.
Venom?
Yeah.
I'll tell you. I did not
care. I still support Venom the first.
Venom 1 I thought was dumb. But I'll tell you, Bibbs' review for
That's
Venom.
That's not a criticism.
It was dumb. It's totally a criticism. I wrote a whole review at the Wrap if you want to read it, but here's the précis. It was dumb.
Okay.
But Bibbs' review of Venom 2, I kind of want to see Venom 2.
Well, I really want to see Venom 2.
Because I think they're sort of leaning into the buddy comedy / rom-com elements of it. I'm like, okay, why not?
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
Why not?
This week,
well, we're fixing to talk about the Addams Family 2. That was the one that I forgot we watched.
Yeah.
I hate to disappoint everybody with this because we are big Addams Family fans.
Generally speaking.
Historically, you and I have both enjoyed and, looked up to the Addams Family.
# life goals.
In our lives. I like to think that, Gomez and Morticia are the kind of married couple anybody would want to be.
Indeed.
You know, When I think to myself, what would Gomez do right now with Morticia? That is when I act. All right. That's all I'm going to say. But the...
And I do speak French sometimes.
But the... that's right. Oh, Alonso de la Realde does speak French sometimes. So let me tell you something about Addams Family 2. It is boring and not good.
Yeah.
I don't know what they thought they were doing with this script. It bears a passing resemblance to the characters as we have come to know them.
Mm-hmm.
It really leans into Wednesday's
alienation.
The Christina Ricci-fication of Wednesday.
Right.
This animated feature. This, by the way, is an animated feature, along with the first Addams Family animated feature from a couple years ago.
Yeah.
They really lean into that version of Wednesday. She was never, on the original TV series, she was never as...
gloomy.
Ruthless, deadpan, wicked, and sort of... Is evil the right word? I think more like...
she has a touch of sadism about her, yeah. I would say. You know, TV Wednesday would behead her dolls or whatnot.
Yes, but would she do was, so she in an innocent little girl sort of way.
Exactly. She wasn't like constantly tormenting Pugsley, which is a right. thing that somebody decided would be funny.
It is funny.
It is. It can be. It's not pretty funny here, but nothing is. She's voiced by Chloe Grace Moretz in the cartoons, yes. by the way.
And the plot involves her being whisked off to live with someone who claims to be her biological father. They look alike.
There's a notion
there's
that
a fake
was...
DNA test that goes down, and he wants to use her to develop a what's it to take over the who?
She creates a thing for her science fair project that right. basically allows people to sort of swap their DNA.
Right.
So like she puts some octopus into Uncle Fester and vice versa.
Yeah.
And this tech bro genius wants in on that, so he fakes this whole thing that like that they were she and her and his daughter were switched at birth at the hospital. Blah,
his
blah,
daughter
blah.
Looks and acts just like Pugsley.
Yeah.
And
most of the film is basically devoted to a road trip. Which I think is the first mistake.
That is absolutely...
Like, the TV show was always
I
want to
go to their house that's a museum,
exactly.
By the way.
Yeah, where people come to see him. Granted, Addams Family Values does give us that great summer camp sequence.
It does.
But that is a thing... That's a thing that works because it's so painted as an anomaly for these kids' lives.
Right.
This movie, this road trip just seems sort of like half-baked and... Nothing particularly funny happens in any of the destinations they go to. And then we get to the plot. None of that's very funny either. And it just, it's supremely boring. I mean, we were just sort of sitting on the sofa being like, when is this movie going to take off and go somewhere?
When my three MVPs, Lurch, Thing, and Cousin It, are terribly misused or underused.
Mm-hmm.
I become angry.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what happens here as well. It's just really kind of a big letdown the whole way through.
Oscar Isaac is back as Gomez and Charlize Theron is back as Morticia. And they, get these little moments every so often that are cute or funny or whatever. But this, I don't know if it should have been more morbid or just more funny. It just doesn't
both.
Work.
It could have been both.
Whatever it is, it isn't.
Anytime, they substitute, a dance sequence for no good reason with a bunch of people who are not the Addams Family.
Yeah.
You think to yourself, why don't I get to be looking at the Addams Family right now doing something?
Grandmama is left to house sit, and then she winds up sort of hosting Burning Man or something?
A rave.
Coachella is going on in the Addams Mansion? I don't know.
If you're a completist, you will probably watch this anyway.
Yeah.
I don't,
If you have young, undemanding children and you are not a good parent who's picking better material for them, you'll park them in front of this and walk off and do whatever it is you do.
Yeah. And there are Addams Family completists out there, and you should see this because you need to know. Because inside your heart, you need to know. But it's bad.
Yeah.
Bad.
Disappointing.
It's very bad.
Even people who were big fans of the first animated one
right.
are not having this one.
Yeah. You know what is not bad? You know what's good? You know what's very good?
What's very good?
Our big reading chair in our bedroom.
It is good.
Here comes another ad. We have a second sponsor.
We do. Look at
us. This week. Yeah, we have two ads this week. Here's the next ad. Our big reading chair in our bedroom came about after years of hunting and hunting and hunting and wanting something that would support us because both of us are fat people and wanting something that was incredibly sturdily made.
Yes.
Because we're fat people. And I don't believe in spending money on stuff that's going to break in 3 years, 7 years, 10 years, 15 years. It shouldn't break. It should stay
furniture.
Furniture, yes. And after all those years of hunting, that involved years of, you know, saving up for a real piece of furniture. Because, you know, you got to have a budget. If you're going to really buy a piece of furniture, you need a budget. We took the plunge. We bought a chair from RogerAndChris.com.
I'm so glad we did.
This ad is for RogerAndChris.com. There will be a series of these ads for RogerAndChris.com in the coming weeks. We promise not to talk about our beautiful chair every time, but our chair is so great.
Mm-hmm. For years, you were all, I want a chair in the bedroom for reading, and I never thought about it much or was missing it.
Yeah.
But then once we got it...
Aren't you glad?
It's so great.
Aren't you glad?
I love it. I don't know how we lived without one.
You were indifferent. I know you were indifferent. You were like, he's got this thing. He needs a chair. I don't know why he thinks he needs a chair, but, you know, we've never had a chair in there. But
there was something about a chair in the bedroom that seemed kind of old lady to me for some reason.
Yeah.
And I just...
That's what's great about it.
It didn't click with me that old ladies know something, and old they were totally right.
Old ladies need a place to sit down
uh-huh.
and have their cup of tea and read their book.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what I had been dreaming of.
A nice cup of tea to sit down.
Some people dream about fancy cars. Other people dream about luxury vacations. I dreamed about a beautiful traditional English roll arm chair, which is what we got.
Yeah.
It's even covered in a wool tweed, a very soft one.
Very soft.
You can sit right on it with your naked butt, and it's still nice and soft, although I never do that.
Please, because I was going
to
say.
I like things to stay nice.
Yes. It's like we slip covered it or something.
Chris did send me some. We've known Chris forever. We've known him longer than he's known his husband, Roger. So technically that makes us closer to him.
I think.
Since we've actually never met Roger.
For sure.
Yeah. Chris gave me some points to mention.
Oh, that we should
actually say in the ad.
Then if it's an ad, we should mention them.
Custom furniture built to the size, depth, and even height you prefer. That's the thing about this place. You go there, you pick every single thing you want about your chair or your couch or whatever it is you're getting. You design it.
They don't tell you. You tell them.
Yeah, exactly. Over 1,000 colors and tons of options for customization like down-free or cleanable, etc. Unlike the vast majority of furniture brands, we actually build our own furniture in our own factories in Hickory, North Carolina and Davidson, North Carolina. We put the same furniture that you order for your home into businesses around the world, sort of a strong enough for Starbucks but made for your living room situation.
Okay.
That's what's up. Go to RogerAndChris.com, the word and in the middle of their name.
RogerAndChris.
And if you're in the market for something, buy it from RogerAndChris.com. End of ad.
Da-da-da-da.
Yeah. Oh, you'll be hearing another one next
time.
Okay,
well, they can get to that when they get to that.
Maybe they'll be the introduction ad next time. Who knows what's going to happen?
Who knows? What else are we talking about today?
We have to talk about Hester Street.
Oh,
the re-release of Hester Street.
The new 4K restoration of Joan Micklin-Silver's early 70s breakthrough film, Hester Street. It was her debut feature, or narrative feature anyway, as a filmmaker. I'm a huge Joan Micklin-Silver fan.
This is true, you are.
I feel like she does not get the credit she deserves as a pioneering American indie. Like, if we're going to talk about people like John Cassavetes and other sort of 1970s off-studio maverick filmmakers, somehow she often gets left out of the conversation. She passed away in 2020, and I think she leaves behind an incredible cinematic legacy, starting with Hester Street, but working through films like Between the Lines, Crossing Delancey.
Crossing Delancey is so charming and so cozy.
Yes.
If you've never seen it, it's an 80s film. It's set in New York. Amy Irving.
Yeah.
And Peter Riegert.
Yeah. And it's actually a great double feature with Hester Street.
Yeah. In a way, it really is. Yes. Although Hester Street is not cozy.
I mean, they're set a century apart, but they're set in kind of the same part of New York.
They're set in the same neighborhood.
And they're dealing with a lot of the same issues. Anyway, we're not going to get into Crossing the Lanes because we're here to talk about Hester Street. But, like, you know, Chilly Scenes of Winter and the HBO film that she made, Finnegan Begin Again, with Mary Tyler Moore and Robert Preston. Like, I adore her work. One of my proudest moments running the USA Film Festival in Dallas was getting to do a great director tribute to Joan Micklin-Silver, and we screened several of her films, and some of the people who were in them came. Anne Miro was there for A Fish in the Bathtub. And I'm so delighted that this beautiful new restoration of Hester Street is making it out to theaters. It opened this past weekend in New York and Los Angeles. It will be going out further. And, you know, it's Cohen Media Group, so I'm sure it'll be popping up on, like, either Criterion Channel or other streaming services, as well as a Blu-ray. So this is a film about immigrants, Jewish immigrants specifically, in New York City in 1896. You have a guy named Yankel who has come over from Europe, and he is living a very assimilated, very American life. He goes by Jake. He runs around with ladies.
He's played by character actor Stephen Keats.
Yes.
Yeah.
His wife, Gittel, played by Carol Kane, comes over with their young son. She is very traditional and wants to stay that way.
She does not speak English. She does not want to take off her wig. She doesn't want really much of anything to do with
the new world.
The new world, because it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
And because she wants to maintain her traditional life in this new place. No one told her she couldn't. But when she shows up, you know, husband's like, that kid's name is Joey now, and we're Americans. I'm a Yankee.
Yeah.
And she looks at him like, who are you? Did I marry you? What's going on with
you?
What
have you done with my husband? You shaved your beard, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's about sort of what happens to their marriage, their relationship. There's a guy who is another tenant in the apartment building who is a scholar. And of course, in the old country, you know, the Talmudic scholars were, you know, the bee's knees, but in America, nobody cares. Go work in the factory.
Right.
And the two of them sort of kindle this relationship. And it is just, it is one of many great films about the immigrant experience, which I think touches so many people in the United States, because, you know, so for so many of us, our parents, our grandparents, maybe our great grandparents were newcomers to this country and had to figure out how to live here and to adjust and what that stuff's like. And this is a country where we continue to be gross and terrible about how we treat immigrants and whether or not we are welcoming immigrants or making their lives, you know, possible in this country, even though we tell ourselves constantly that, oh, we're the melting pot, and, you know.
Yeah, the story the United States loves to tell about the United States is that we're a nation of immigrants and we've always welcomed them. And that is a full, whole lie.
Yeah.
There's, you name a country, not just the people who were brought here involuntarily as slaves.
Or refugees,
but people who, you know, hopefully, with hope in their hearts, got on a boat and came here only to be met with signs like no Irish allowed in
the
here.
The Italians, just Jewish people.
Wild.
Not welcome here.
Read any sort of historical account of what happens to immigrants when they first come to the United States. And every time, it's like nothing but abuse. So the fact that this is being re-released now, I think makes it very timely. because for the past good now 5-6 years, immigration has become again,
yes,
this hate-filled issue in the United States with terrible right-wing people. Everybody who loves Trump, they want everyone turned around and sent home, in spite of the fact that it is legal to ask for asylum, yes, here if you're fleeing violence, and many people are.
And much of that violence was prompted by the United States in the first place.
Yes. So I'm glad it's being released now. It means something to have it here and now again.
And outside of the political context, I think people need to see Carol Kane's Academy Award nominated performance,
yes,
which is so great.
Yes.
And, you know, it is heartbreaking and so moving and intuitive and empathetic. You know, we think of her as a comedy legend, which she is, but this is a full on dramatic performance, which,
right,
is just, it's so great. And, you know, Doris Roberts pops up early on in her career. It's Lynn Shay's.
Like it's Doris Roberts' first film, I think.
Maybe. She had done quite a bit of TV before, yeah, that, I think. But like, it's Lynn Shay's first film.
Yeah.
And, you know, the restoration is so beautiful. Like, this movie always looked like it had been shot in an earlier era.
Yeah.
The way the tactile nature of the black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it feels like this beautiful thing from, you can't believe it's from the 70s. You would think that it was from like the actual turn of the century.
Yeah. Carol Kane is so small and contained in this film. And I think maybe some people would think that's a criticism perhaps, but it's not.
No.
Because this is a small and contained
woman
film.
Oh.
She's exactly the right tone, approach, stature, you know, for everything that's going on around her in this film. She is a person who is lost in a new place with no one really that she counted on to help her through it. And she has to figure out a way to get through it.
And what I think what's so great about the Micklin Silver's, you know, female gaze as a director is that you have this character who is very much a traditionalist and who is sort of early on kind of clinging to the ways of the country that she's just fled. And by the end of the film is sort of allowed to become an American in a way that feels right for her.
Right.
She's allowed to become modern in a way that feels right for her. And it is this triumph in that it's not inflicted upon her by anyone else. She is the motor for her own life, and she figures out what it is she wants and how she's going to do it and how she's going to be in the world, be in the new world, you know, that she's come into. I love this movie so much, and I'm so thrilled that audiences will get to see it because it's not been super available.
Not really.
For quite a while now. So
Oh, I'm sorry, go on.
No, just whenever there's a new theatrical re-release of a 4K restoration, I know that means there's
Blu-ray
around
coming.
The corner,
yeah.
There's streaming around the corner, so like if you can't see it right away, just make a note when it crosses your path, Hester Street, you got to see this movie.
This was the very first time I ever saw Carol Kane in anything.
Wow. Okay.
Because it, you know, played theatrically.
Right.
She got the Academy Award nomination, but it was, you know, a small independent film,
yeah,
that did not play in my small,
right,
city.
It was a very profitable film. It cost around $400,000 to make, and it grossed $5 million.
And so not long after its theatrical run, it aired on PBS.
That's when I saw it.
And I was, I guess, 12?
Yeah.
My first experience with subtitles.
Mm.
And that kind of black and white.
Right.
Because it has a very sepia sort of tone.
Yeah, not like a creamy Fred Astaire,
yeah,
black and white.
And I, at the time, you know, I'm a kid, I didn't quite know what to make of it. But I remember watching her thinking, is she American? Like, I didn't know. And then, of course, you know, a year later, I see her in the Muppet movie. I'm like, hey.
I think I had seen...
She was on Taxi after that, of course.
I think I had seen The World's Greatest Lover before seeing Hester Street on PBS. So I remember kind of having an idea of who she was.
Yeah, I didn't know who she was at all.
I had not seen Carnal Knowledge yet, which she also
obviously, we were children.
Yes.
Not allowed to see Carnal Knowledge. If you had asked me what the words carnal knowledge even meant at that point, I'd be like, I don't know. I don't know what is a carnal.
Yeah.
And no one would explain it to me. Because I know I asked. Speaking of carnal, nice segue.
There you go. Look at you.
Titan.
Winner of the Palme d'Or. If you think you know what this movie is about because it won the Palme d'Or at Cannes, you do not.
All right. Yeah, I'm gonna talk about what this is about.
Okay.
And I'm going to say only as much as I need to say.
Good idea.
All right.
Leave the surprise.
There are plenty of spoilers available to you on the internet if you want to know everything that happens in this movie. And we say this a million times. It doesn't matter what happens. It's how it happens.
TM April Wolf.
But for me, I felt like the element of surprise and shock in this film merits me not giving away a lot of stuff.
Agreed.
All right. It's the second feature from Julia Ducournau, French filmmaker. It is about a little girl in France who is in a terrible car accident. This happens in the first 3 minutes. The accident occurs thanks to the bad driving of her bad father, who, if you know, is played by Bertrand Bonello, the French filmmaker who made Nocturama, which is a movie that you and I both really like a lot.
We did as an LK club meeting.
Yep. Back. So he shows up and I was like, oh, hey. In order to save her life from this horrific car accident that she's in, doctors implant a titanium plate in her skull. And she's left with a wildly ornate surgery scar on the side of her head.
It looks like a scorpion.
One that she carries around for the rest of her life. Fast forward to her adulthood, and now she is a person who does, for a job, sexy dances on the hoods of fancy vintage automobiles at car shows, while men take pictures with their phone cameras. It is at a car show, or rather after a car show, that she commits her first murder. And embarks on what can only be referred to as a serial killing spree.
Yeah, that's fair.
Randomly, no rhyme or reason to who she murders. They get in her way. They're done.
And sometimes, you know, there are witnesses to the murders and she has to kill them,
and
too.
Yes, she has to.
She has to. You know how it is.
Then she has sex with a car. Not just like inside a car.
No.
She has sex with a car. And eventually winds up in a fire station impersonating the long-lost son of my favorite French cinema brute, Vincent Landon, star of many Claire Denis films. And then things get weirder.
Yeah. This movie started out, and I thought, oh, it's going to be like Crash. And then it was like,
oh, no, it's not.
I mean, it is for a second, but then it's off to being a lot of other things, too. This is, there was not a moment where I felt relaxed in this film. it constantly had me on edge of like, what next? What else is going to happen here? How? What am I going to have to look at that I can't believe I'm seeing? What are these characters going to do?
So bad for
to
you.
Themselves or to each other?
My poor spouse is a squeamish sort. You wouldn't think so. The son of a surgeon, many of your siblings are also doctors.
I can't look at any of them.
Married
stuff.
Themselves off to other doctors. Yeah. This is a doctor-heavy family, and you can't deal with the sight of blood. And if you're the kind of person who also cannot deal with the sight of blood, you will see a lot of blood.
And other fluids.
You will see a lot of blood in this movie. You will also see a lot of point of impact body destruction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you will see a lot of what we would now refer to as body horror.
For sure.
When her body begins to do unusual things. I won't explain why.
Right.
But occasionally she leaks motor oil. So, here's for me what I really think this film is. It's it's kind of like Vertigo. In that it is about people who
mold other people.
Who mold other people and who mold themselves into the shape they think someone around them might need.
I mean, it is a surrogate family plot.
It absolutely is.
More than anything
and
else.
And on that level, it becomes very moving.
Yeah.
And tender and sort of desperately sad because you know that the people involved are, they're doing their best to become what they think they need to become,
mm-hmm.
and they can't. And it's sort of a losing game on both ends.
When all the firemen bros are bouncing against each other and dancing hard to that techno music.
That's some Beau Travail action.
I was
going right
to say,
there.
Was I intended to think of Claire Denis? Because I certainly did.
No, there are plenty of cinematic antecedents to this film.
Mm.
Not the least of which is, you know, David Cronenberg.
Yeah. But Olivier
from
Agnieszka Holland.
Agnieszka Holland. You are treated to some beautifully lurid filmmaking.
Yes.
It is colorful and moody and show-offy. You know what I mean?
Self-conscious, like, yes.
As a filmmaker, I think Julia Ducournau is very confident.
Oh, yeah.
She is determined to make you know that you were watching a Julia Ducournau film.
Yeah, I mean, this movie has some of the most aggressive sound design, I think, I've encountered in a film since, like, Pola X.
So if you don't mind that level of self-regard from a director, and I don't, as long as they're, look, if you're going to grandstand, if you're going to peacock around the place, do it.
Yeah. If you're going to write the check, cash the check.
There are some art housey things here that I think, they feel sometimes like a dead end. There's an element of ambiguity that pops up every once in a while that I think, why didn't you just me this?
There are moments of like, how did we get from here to here? And okay, fine, I'll just go with it.
But
this is a movie that has and will be very divisive.
Absolutely. Because not only is it extremely violent and extremely gory, it is sort of emotionally punishing too.
Yeah.
Here's another thing that I was thinking about a lot when I watched it. There's a queerness going on, and I don't know anything about Julia Ducournau's sexual orientation, anything. But there's so much exploration of what bodies will do.
Right.
Even things that bodies can't do. That I sat through it thinking that partially this film is about what does your body mean? Not just to you, but to other people around you. Like people who have access to your body, your need to perhaps transform your body.
What is presented to the world.
How you present your body to the world. You know, who gets to know about your body.
Yeah, I definitely want to read some trans film critics talking about this film. Because I think there is material here that I would love to see explored in that direction.
Yeah, there's a lot of critical work to be done with this movie.
I want to give a big shout out to Agatha Roussel.
It's her first feature.
We just talked about.
She goes for it too.
We talked about the kid and everybody's talking about Jamie, who'd never made a movie before, and who was just like exploding out into this movie. Mm-hmm. And here's another performance. You're like, where did you come from? Because you can do everything and you are fearless.
Right.
Yeah. It's something else.
So if you're up for a ride, and that's not a car bun.
No.
And you know, if you are sturdy, go ahead. I think it's great.
Yeah. Currently only in theaters, but, you know, we'll be streaming at some point.
Yeah. The Many Saints of Newark.
Yeah.
In theaters and on HBO Max.
Until the 31st.
It is the how Tony Soprano became a little kid and then a teenager and then a grown person, a grown crime man.
Well, we don't get to that part.
We don't get to the part where he becomes a crime person, but we do get to see his childhood.
Yes.
And also the young years of everybody else in the Sopranos world. There's a crime story involved in this. It's not just, here's what this character did and here's what that character did. The crime story here involves people that primarily were not on the show.
Yeah, they were
older.
Dead
they were the, dead by that time.
Yeah.
And you know, to that end, it's about social change in the 60s. It's about racism in the 60s and how that was reflected in the world of organized crime going into the 70s. Leslie Odom Jr., Alessandro
Nivola,
the two main, you know, sort of warring factions here. And around them as they're, you know, navigating their crime story, which for me was not especially interesting. There are, you know, young Sopranos people doing things that will make you go, oh, hey,
I remember
that from the show, yeah. and this is how that became that thing that happens on the show.
Which is a very prequel-y thing to do that I hate.
So for me, I was there for the Easter eggs.
The Easter eggs
and
are
pretty much only the Easter eggs.
It's kind of all it has to offer, I think. I've seen a theory floating around film Twitter that, see, this is what the movie that Christopher wanted to write all along.
Christopher narrates.
Yeah, Christopher, the Michael Imperioli character, narrates.
And Michael
the film.
Imperioli is the one narrating.
Yes.
Yeah.
He narrates from beyond the grave. Alessandro Nivola plays his father.
Yes.
Ray Liotta plays his grandfather. And so it's, you know, the Moltisanti's, the many saints, are kind of front and center here with, you know, Tony Soprano and company sort of on the sidelines. I don't know that theory holds up just because I think things happen in this movie that
this is a better movie than Christopher could have made.
Christopher, the whole thing would have to be really clumsily written for it to be his movie. But also I think things happen that Christopher didn't and couldn't have known about.
Right, right.
So let's calm down. I was pretty underwhelmed.
You
by
heard
this.
It here. Alonzo told you to calm down.
You know, like, do we need to know that Livia Soprano needed antidepressants? Like, I think we could figure that out. You know,
I just like how they made Vera Farmiga look so much like Edie Falco.
That is the movie's greatest stroke of genius. They make
the greatest stroke of genius is Ray Liotta.
Well, yeah, he's something else. But yeah, the fact that they make Vera Farmiga look so much like Edie Falco really adds a whole psychological subtext to Tony. I mean, like, we talked about this on Breakfast All Day, and we started getting into the whole thing, unpacking about, like, what does this movie tell us about Tony's background and how it affected him later and blah, blah, blah. And by the end of that conversation, I'm like, yeah, but we already know this from the show.
Yeah, the show gave you everything you need to know.
All of that. And yeah. So this is like, and maybe if this had been like a 4-episode limited series, they would have the real estate to unpack some of these characters we've never seen before, or even the ones we have seen before, and provide some insight, provide some depth, go somewhere. But I'm not getting it out of this.
It is a well-made, high-quality production.
Oh, yeah.
It looks as good as the show.
Sure, the period detail is like, you know.
The period detail is good. It moves efficiently like the show always did. But personally speaking, I think it is an entertaining curiosity.
Yeah.
But it is absolutely unnecessary.
And if you're not already like a super fan and a completist of The Sopranos, I don't think you're going to come away with much. Because it really is.
That is correct.
It is pretty much a fan service, you know, exercise.
Yeah. You're completely right. Yeah. And so am I.
That's right.
Do we have letters?
We have a couple. And we have a 5-star review. If you leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, we will read it on the program.
It is from Stout BR.
Okay.
I look forward to this podcast every week.
Oh.
I was introduced to them via What the Flick, now called Breakfast All Day. Week after week, Alonzo and Dave deliver intelligent, thoughtful film criticism.
Ooh.
The rapport is easy, and the conversations about their lives are always enjoyable. Dave has phenomenal music taste.
Oh, you're
this
enjoying
is true.
That. Okay.
Yep. I sure do.
You're such a shrinking violet. Can't stand praise.
That Amy Grant, y'all. She's so good. Go listen to the music of Amy Grant. What was I telling you the other day? Watching the Jesus music put one of the weirdest Amy Grant songs in my head.
Yes.
A song that I have known for 40 years. Mm. It is a song about hoping that you get to die so that you get to go to heaven and be with Jesus. You know, back in the day when I was a teenager in high school, I was like, oh yeah, sure, I understand that. Who doesn't want to die and go to heaven
right
and be
on,
with
Amy.
Jesus? Right on, Amy. But you listen to it now. And you think, why are you wishing to be dead?
You have so much to live for, Amy Grant.
Amy Grant is a goth.
Apparently. Who knew?
If you're looking for it, you should go listen to a song called That's the Day. Meaning, that's the day I get to be dead
and
go to
Jesus.
Heaven and meet Jesus.
Is there more in this review after
Yes, of course.
Okay, well, you sidetracked because I knew you were so excited someone likes your taste in music.
My taste in music. It's impeccable.
Mm-hmm.
All right. In short, I would totally love to hang with these guys in real life, but I'll settle for my weekly fix via this podcast.
Oh, thanks, Stout BR.
Got a letter from Jack.
Okay.
Dear Mr. Linoleum and Mr. Knife. Which one is which?
Call me Mr. Cellophane.
Are you the linoleum or am I the linoleum?
I think I'm the linoleum.
I think I am. You walk all over me.
Oh, please. Who of the two of us, who is Mr. Knife if not you?
I don't know.
We're both the wife.
Shall I read the letter?
Yes.
That is a reference to when we first decided we were going to have a completely not legal wedding ceremony in Dallas in the mid to late 90s. Your dad, bless him, said, who is the woman? said, well, when I'm making waffles, I wear the apron. So I guess that's me. We're going to gender everything around here.
My father was born in 1920.
He was. And he was great.
Yes.
Called me fat the first time I met him. I'm not making that up either. So, the letter goes, I have a 40 movie list for you to knife.
Holy
what?
Crap.
Wait a second. What are we... Hang on. I'm scrolling down. How many movies?
This...
Okay, this is too many. There's 34 movies on this list.
I thought it was like a, should I watch this or should I watch this list for October?
Hang on. My partner has requested a list of horror movies for us to watch through October. Fridays and Saturdays will be our double feature nights, and Tuesdays are being skipped over due to our busy schedule. Each week of Sunday through Saturday has its own theme. If you have an influx of letters this week and it's too long to read through, then please refer to only the last week of movies. The parentheses are for what streaming services the movies are on, if any. Listen, here's what we could do. We'll just take it week by week.
Okay.
All right. Week one. They're going to do... So this is what they're going to watch.
All right.
They're not asking us to pick for them.
Oh, I see.
Okay. They're telling us what we're going to watch.
All right.
The first night, they're going to watch Jennifer's Body and Scream. I support this.
I'm not the biggest Jennifer's Body fan in the world, but it has its following now, apparently.
That's because you're a misogynist.
Yes, that must be it. There can be no other reason.
There's no other reason why.
None.
The next night, they're going to watch Malignant and Little Shop of Horrors.
Fun.
Night three, they're going to watch the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Sure, why not?
I support this. Let's give them the next... Let's take the next week, too.
Okay.
All right. The next week is going to be all animated. So, Casper the Friendly Ghost.
Okay.
Was that like the one with Christina Ricci?
I don't know. Is that...
From the 90s? Casper the Dead Boy?
I thought it was just called Casper.
I don't know what it's called. I forget.
Maybe they're watching old Casper the Friendly Ghost shorts.
Maybe. Frank and Weenie.
Fun.
Yeah. Corpse Bride, which I did.
Yeah, it's fine.
Monster House.
Love that.
And
one.
Then that's a double feature with Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, fun. Okay, yeah.
I sure do love that Nightmare Before Christmas. Mm. And these French fried potatoes. French fried taters.
Our friend Jay Red worked on Monster House.
He did. Perfect Blue and Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island.
Wow.
Y'all are perverts.
I think Satoshi Kon is not down with that, but you do you.
And then Coraline.
Nice, great.
All right. So we'll save this.
Okay.
And we'll get into more of your stuff next year. So far, we approve of everything.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I would throw Paranorman in there somewhere too if we're talking about animated films, but that's just me.
Shoddy says. Dear David Alonso, like you, I have always had the biggest crush on James Gandolfini and his big belly and wheezing nostrils. Shoddy, you know where I live. Meaning, you know where my heart lives. My heart broke when he died. Just the most beautiful man. She continues, I was so happy with The Sopranos because, unlike Scorsese, David Chase took these Italian caricatures and enriched them with complex inner lives. With Many Saints of Newark, Chase creates another conflicted antihero in Alessandro Nivola. I agree with that. Going through nebulous times in American history. But unfortunately, Mr. Nivola also has an anvil tied around his ankle as the movie feels like it's on a timer to go, ow, every 5 minutes to remind us of how awesome The Sopranos used to be. David Chase is a genius who practically gave birth to the modern TV streaming landscape, and he clearly wants to atone for some of the anti-black mistakes he made with Sopranos. So I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt here that the studio would not greenlight his mid-budget drama unless it had the Sopranos cinematic universe in the title. Another good movie ruined by studio notes. Anyway, rest in peace, my future dream husband, Charlie.
I don't know.
This sounds on the money to me.
I don't know. I'm curious. I would think that he's in a place where as long as he was making a movie that was in the Sopranos universe, they were going to be fine with it. And I don't know if they pressed on the details of what that would look like, but I don't know. Also, I think Scorsese gives his gangsters inner life, but that's, you know.
Listen, just don't go into Scorsese right now. Don't do it.
I didn't bring it up.
Okay. Not a pity letter, says this letter from Harold. Greetings, Knifers. Would you want to be called Knifers? What is the name of your fandom? We don't have a fandom.
Yeah.
And if we do have a fandom, stop it right now. How about that?
No one has ever come up with a collective term for people who listen to this program.
Great people who listen to Linoleum Knife.
Yeah.
That's what they're called. Yeah. I've written before and often consider writing you guys a letter with a list to be knifed, of course. But I usually procrastinate. It doesn't happen. When your latest podcast had no letters, I thought it was my time. This list will be themed to movies featuring character actors.
Okay.
Inspired by the current trend to have only one hot A-list person play these parts. Oh, sorry. Inspired by the current trend to have only hot A-list people play all these parts. See Knives Out, with the exception of M. Emmett Walsh. As a kid in the 70s, I'd see some of these actors in films like The Parent Trap and The Trouble with Angels. Seeing them in older movies is like bumping into an old friend. I snuck in an extra one. These could have been 10. I almost added another just to include Margaret Rutherford. Murder at the Gallop. Here we go. Number one, The Old Dark House.
Oh, fun.
It just edged out Bride of Frankenstein and The Invisible Man. Worry not, Una and Elsa will be represented. Number two, Lady for a Day.
Oh, okay.
I haven't seen that.
Frank Capra. Remade as Pocketful of Miracles. And remade by Jackie Chan as Mr. Canton and Lady Rose.
I've seen Mr. Canton and Lady Rose.
There you go.
Yeah. Three, The Penguin Pool Murders.
I don't know that one.
Edna Mae Oliver and James Gleason solving murders. It is better than Moonlighting.
Fun.
The Model and the Marriage Broker.
I know.
Stars Thelma Ritter. Who makes matches for all kinds, including Nancy Culp. All right, that goes to the top of the list. Right there.
By the way, Old Dark House, if you missed it, we did a film and a movie episode where we did Old Dark House and Clue, and it was a lot of fun.
Witness for the prosecution, Charles Laughton as lead, and as promised, Elsa Lanchester and Una O'Connor.
Yes, yes, yes.
The Bishop's Wife.
Yep.
Elsa and Gleason again, and add in Monty Woolley and Gladys Cooper.
You betcha.
The Man Who Came to Dinner, just for Mary Wicks and Billy Burke. This time, Monty's a lead. I love The Man Who Came to Dinner. I really love The Man Who Came to Dinner.
I've tried it twice, and it just doesn't work for me for some reason. But for me, the Gladys Cooper movie for me is now Voyager. But you know.
Topper, Roland Young, married to Billy Burke with Eugene Paulette. You want to read something wild? Go look up Eugene Paulette. That guy went off the deep end before he died. Like, in a real wild way.
Oh, my.
Yeah. The Ruggles of Red Gap.
Oh, okay.
Roland Young, Lawton, Mary Boland, Zazu Pitts, Charles Ruggles. I have not seen this one either.
I know of it. I've never seen it.
Born to Dance. That's on the Criterion Channel right now, I think, or it's on the TCM app.
Is that one of the Dorothy Arzner ones, or am I always getting that confused with Dance Girl?
This
Dance?
Is Eleanor Powell.
Oh, okay.
It's got Sid Silvers, Una Merkel, and Buddy Ebsen.
Oh, okay.
And Imitation of Life,
1934,
just because I forgot Ned Sparks, Louise Beavers.
Have you seen the original Imitation of Life?
He's talking about the 1934. That's the original, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I have not.
Me neither.
Yeah.
Claudette Colbert and... In the remake,
great list.
She becomes a big star. In the original one, I think she and Louise Beavers collaborate on like a pancake mix that makes them rich.
100% knife.
For sure.
Ignore Alonzo's distaste for The Man Who Came to Dinner. Because it's terrific.
But look, everything on paper, I should want to love it. It's like Monty Woolley and Betty Davis and Christmas and Mary Wicks. And I just
What's your problem?
I don't think it works.
You are an insane person.
I don't think the comedy flows. I don't think it's paced very well. It's no Noises Off. If you're going to do something that's that much of a filmed play.
Can this marriage be saved?
I don't know.
We're done with this podcast right now. We're through.
Fine. Thank you so much for listening. Check out our friends. Well, check out my other podcasts, please. Maximum Film, Breakfast All Day, every so often Deck the Hallmark. What podcast should we spotlight this week? That I haven't gone into focus on yet. You know, I don't think we've done Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley. You know, our friend Dennis, we've known forever, a hilarious writer.
You've known him forever and ever.
Yeah, I've known him for very long.
I've known him for 22 years. You've known him for 32 years?
Something like that. We met in the 90s, but, you know, it's been a while. You know, a very talented writer, one of the best interviewers out there. And so it's so exciting that he does this show that is all interviewing. He really kind of has a great skill to it. Like, he interviewed me once on that show and threw questions at me that I just literally never thought about before. That really kind of, you know, took me to illuminating places, which is why he is also the co-creator of the incredibly fun and insightful game You Don't Know My Life.
Right.
But yeah, every episode of Dennis Anyone, he talks to different creative folks about their process and what inspires them and how they keep going and you know, all the things that go into, you know, making creative people. So he's really good at what he does. You should check out his podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast for free at Apple Podcasts. And if you leave us a 5-star review, like Stout RB?
Stout BR.
Stout BR did.
Stout Brr.
Stout Brr. We will we'll read it on the show. You can also leave us positive feedback in the many, many places that we stream, including Spotify, Pandora, Google Play, Apple Music, CastBox, Podbean, Verbal, you know, the whole nine yards. Thank you for Blue for our wonderful theme music. Check out his stuff at blueBLEU.bandcamp.com. Follow us on social media at LinoleumCast and drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. It's been lovely. We'll catch you guys next time. And until then,
goodbye.